Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to I'll Have What She's Having, a food and drink podcast from me, Sophie Wybird.
And me, Hannah Crosby. Every week, Sophie and I sit down to dinner. She makes a dish, I pair a wine, and we put the world to rights. This week, we pair an Alsatian Silvana with a Bloody Mare bit.
And we talk Indonesian food, The Last of Us, and the Chin Chin scandal.
Hello! Yeah, this is the second episode that we've recorded today. We recorded an episode that you're going to hear in the future. But we're kind of time traveling back in time now.
We're really jumbling the timeline today.
So if you want like the realistic timeline, listen to next week's episode and then listen to this one for like a, yeah, realistic portrayal of how our energy levels are heading. But we're not alone. You might be able to hear a second laugh. No, I have not learned to laugh at my own jokes while I'm telling them. We have a lovely special guest, Rahel Stephanie. Hi,
hello.
Girl.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're so happy to have you.
I'm excited to be here.
Honestly, it's been what? I think it was 2 months ago when I asked you to be on.
You did, and you asked me to come in for a date where it was like the day after I had landed back from Indonesia.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I could probably do it, but I might be an emotional wreck.
How are you feeling now?
Still an emotional wreck. But we're good.
It's fine. Well, I'm just going to give a brief intro to Rahel. If you're listening to this and you don't know who she is, I mean, why? But she is an all-round boss babe, cook, founder of the plant-based Indonesian supper club, Spoons. Rahel set up her business after noticing a lack of authentic Indonesian food in London. We'll find out a bit more on that in a bit. And tickets now sell out within minutes. Getting a ticket for a Spoon Supper Club has been likened to trying to get a ticket for Glastonbury. I can vouch for why. I've been to one. So if you went to one too.
I've been to one. It was bloody lovely.
The food and vibes are immaculate. And yeah, very happy to have you here. But a lot of people don't know that as well as an amazing cook, you're also an amazing person to have a conversation with. So
I'm glad I'm more than just a chef.
More than just a pretty pair of hands. So like Spoons, me and Rahel have the same mum. We've got the same manager, Siobhan. We're both part of Hot Sauce.
Same mum. I was like, what? Like, news to me.
Absolute bombshells being dropped.
Yeah,
here
bombshells
today.
Being dropped. Yeah, me and Rahel are related.
We've actually brought you here today to talk to you about something really serious.
Is that a reunion? But alas, we're not related.
Damn it.
Wish I was, but we are instead related by agency rather than by blood. But I first heard of Rahel when I was introduced to her by, I'm talking about her as if she's not fucking in front of me, but when I was first introduced by Siobhan. And, but how long have you been doing? Because like when we first met, you'd only just recently gone freelance. But how long has Spoons kind of been in the works for?
Well, I started doing the supper clubs towards the end of 2019. converted into kind of home deliveries over the lockdown, over the pandemic. Because I actually started off doing, you know, 4 weeks of fundraisers for the NHS, doing those kind of like meal deliveries.
Legend. Nice.
At the end of those 4 weeks, I got put on furlough from my day job. So then I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to continue doing this anyway. So
what was your day job?
My day job at that point was a project coordinator for an architecture firm.
Ah, nice, nice.
And yeah, then London opened back up again and I hopped back into doing the supper clubs and yeah, just been doing it since.
Oh, and it's amazing. And when you were doing your deliveries, was it just like, usually when I kind of think of kind of like the spoons package, a single ingredient, single kind of item comes to mind, and that is the pandan blondies, greenies.
Oh, yeah, it's been featured many a times in the home deliveries because it would always be kind of like a lunchbox plus a slice of cake or kind of a dessert. So yeah, cute little package going around for, I think it was like $12.50 each time per person. So
were you delivering them yourselves?
No.
Little push bike, massive fucking basket on the front.
Well, you know what? I did kind of like hand deliver them to people living around me at the time and help me. For like things that were a bit further away, for people who were living a bit further away. My partner helped me out a lot in doing like some cycling. Nice. So yeah, it was a really cute little two people operation.
You spoons number two. When I first saw you doing some catering, when I first saw you live doing catering, he came up and I was like, oh, do you work for Rahel? And you went, in a way. Tom, if you're listening, we love you and your dedication to spoons and Rahel.
Boo chef.
Sous chef, exactly. Bouchef. Bouchef. That's amazing. Like sous chef.
Bouchef. We've all got bouchefs, I think.
Yeah. Don't we?
I think I'm the bouchef.
Your partner's cooking your house, isn't he?
He is, very much so. Yeah. It's one of those things where I thought I was the sickest chef before I got into this relationship. You know, I was always the cook. I was always whipping up like things and like making amazing show-stopping dinners. Get with this guy. First thing he makes me is like a 12-hour like pork broth ramen. And I was just like,
oh, incredible.
Just fucking hang up those chef shoes right now.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, like Tom's also the chef in our house just because, I don't know, I think ever since dipping into this whole food thing full time, sometimes or most times the last thing I want to do is cook.
Busman's holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah. All I want to just sit back. So yeah.
What do you get a takeout from him?
Ooh, good question.
Anything not in the slow cooker, because basically, so the backstory behind that is, I think a few Christmases ago, he got given a slow cooker for Christmas, and since then, he had only just been cooking mush in the slow cooker. It was always
I need some texture.
Brown mush again and again.
Prison food.
And again. Yeah. So honestly, and he, prior to that, he was always a more adventurous cook.
Okay.
So I would always encourage him to, you know, not use the slow cooker.
Do you think that maybe he also got burnt out from helping you with, maybe he also now feels... Is that why you've got his brother moving in with you? So that you can get someone else to cook for you?
Oh my God.
You've been rumbled. Yeah. And looking ahead to the next year or so, what is in the future of Spoons and Rahel Stephanie?
Lots more supper clubs and pop-ups, planning the next one for mid-March and trying to make it more regularly throughout the year as well. Going back to Bali in June for some work out there.
Nice.
Going to be working out there at the Ubud Food Festival, as well as hopefully another pop-up while I'm out there. And I don't know, yeah, kind of the same thing going forward, but we'll see, I guess. Lots in the plans, lots in the works. TBC.
We are so excited.
Very, very excited to see what you do.
Well, we've got the food and the wine in front of us, but before we kind of get into the chatting of the shit, I think there's something a little bit more pressing and serious that we should talk about that we kind of want to draw you guys' attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you will have seen it all over the news. It's all we've been talking about all week. But we started this week with this massive series of earthquakes happening on the border of Turkey and Syria in Gaziantep. And at the time of recording, it's taken more than 11,000 people's lives. And that count is only going to be going up. There are so many ways that we can help support people over there, both in funding projects. And also there's loads of people in London who are doing lots of smaller things to try and raise funds. So we just wanted to point you guys in the direction of some ways that you could help out.
I mean, January is over. You all have money now.
You've had your paycheck.
You all have money.
After the longest month in existence.
Redistribute that wealth.
Yes, get it back in
queen.
There.
Yes, comrade slay.
There's a lot of the funds that I've seen on Instagram are pointing towards Islamic Relief UK, also to Choose Love, who are a really well-established charity who have operated in that area for many, many years and are connected to lots of projects already, specifically amongst displaced people who have come over from Syria and have been living in camps all in that area for a long time, who are lots of the people who are being affected by this. So if you would like to donate to a charity, we would recommend going for Islamic Relief UK or for Choose Love.
As well as that, there's a few people that we know who are doing fundraiser things that donate to several different charities as well. Mangal 2 being one. They're selling a chili sauce with all profits going to Turkish Red Crescent charity. They're Turkish boys. It's a matter close to their hearts. Like, go and support them. I mean, you're probably going to have a meal at Mangal 2 at some point this year anyway. Do it.
I'm sure that chili sauce is bloody delicious.
Yeah, and it's probably absolutely delicious too. As well as that, our previous podcast guest, Hannah Cawley, founder of Cawley Studios, is raffling a beautiful jacket that I don't think is available to buy like custom online.
It's one
of a kind. It's gorgeous. At the time of release, there will be one day left in which you can raffle for this gorgeous jacket. But the final thing, Melek Erdal, Mel's Place East, at Mel's Place East, is also organising a charity bake sale to raise funds for people on both sides of the border on Sunday the 26th. So when this comes out, it's very much towards the end of the month, so there'll be plenty of time to keep your eyes peeled on her feed.
That'll be somewhere in London, so if you're London-based, come check it out. If you're London-adjacent and fancy a trip into the big smoke, then come in for it anyway.
We'll definitely be putting all of these resources and links and profiles of where you can kind of like help and buy shit, but also if you can just donate and don't want anything in return, that's even, it's even better, I would say. It's much more altruistic. So yeah, we'll pop it on. But if there's anything else that we've missed or you think our attention should be brought to, then please DM us as soon as you can and we'll kind of like make like a combined post and like put it out.
Absolutely.
So it's all in one place. Anyway, on to the food and wine.
Onto the food and wine. I'm so pleased with the food I've got today.
It smells amazing.
I realise there's a bit of a theme where I keep cooking really cheesy things. And next week, I'm going to make a promise to myself that it's not going to contain cheese or bread. We're going to divert from cheese and bread, which feels mean.
Sacrilegious at this point.
I seem to have... That's the path I'm going down this season, whatever. So today, this is I think I've invented this. If you've invented this, no, you haven't. It was me.
Yeah, hopefully we don't get them. You know what I call them? I call them actuallys.
Actually. I think we might get an actually.
Actually.
But the thing I've made today is a bloody mare bit.
Love that.
So it's a Welsh rare bit and a Bloody Mary had a baby. Ooh. So a Welsh rare bit has nothing to do with rabbits. It's some kind of old English word. People always think it's got rabbit in it. Mm-hmm. Can promise you it doesn't. It's basically just cheese on toast, but it's cheese that's been melted down with some beer. And it's got loads of Worcester sauce in there, some Tabasco, maybe some cayenne pepper. For this one, I've cooked loads of tomato puree down in the butter first. So it's got like this really rich, jammy savouriness to it. And then I've put a fuck ton of Tabasco in it.
So thank you.
It's got some heat as well. I'm thinking you might get some more chili sauce out the kitchen just in case, because I know that what you've got for us to drink, Han, goes with spicy food.
Yes. We've also got, I just bought some wasabi sriracha.
Oh.
So maybe we have a little sprinkling of that too.
I sounded like Scooby-Doo just then. I don't know.
You did. Oh, you really did.
Never done that before. Hey.
Yeah. I've got something that's like super juicy and aromatic, which typically pairs. When me and Rahel did a supper club before, a lot of Rahel's food is quite spicy. And so I kind of went on like this tangent. I was like, fuck. Yeah, why isn't spicy food paired with wine more? It's because usually you're kind of like a bit afraid because the spice tends to accentuate the alcohol, makes the burn more intense. But if you have like a juicier natural wine that's pretty aromatic, I tend to find that it pairs quite well. So today we have a Sylvana and Auxerrois blend from Alsace, made by a producer called Anne Laure. based in Northern Alsace, and she only took on her 1 hectare parcel, which is minuscule in terms of...
That's teeny.
Teeny, teeny. She only took it on 3 years ago, and this is her first vintage of this wine. So the Sylvana is from 40-year-old vines, and the Auxerrois is from 20-year-old vines. She's a bit of a rising star of Alsace. Yeah, two-thirds Sylvana, one-third Auxerrois, lots of stone fruit and citrus, juicy, aromatic. Hopefully it tastes amazing, because we've gone like... Another theme that's developed throughout this series is we've done really fucking well on the pairings, and I really don't want to be let down in front of Rahel because she's so cool.
Stop. You're right, though. I'm judging you.
You're right, though. I am cool. Is it a slay or a nay? Let's find out. Cheers.
Legend.
Clink. Clink.
No. Oh, that's so nice.
I need...
That is exactly the kind of white wine I like.
Oh, wow. That is so delicious.
It tastes like apple juice for grown-ups.
It really does.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, it's so Alsatian. But yeah, I think that there's only a couple of places in the world where there is such plot specificity, Burgundy being one of them. But Alsace, it's crazy because it's such like a patchwork of terroir and different soil types that like one producer can have like six different soil types. Obviously, this is a lot smaller than most Alsatian producers, but I still think that you've got like this incredible focused character to this wine. Like it's so saline, but it's also so peachy and lemony. Absolutely. And pear-y. Oh, it's perfect. I am so excited for this rare bit. Shall we just, sorry.
Do it.
Mare bit.
Have it. This one reminds me loads of my favorite Gruner.
Mm.
Which is the Arndorfer one.
Oh.
Which, it's got quite a tall bottle with
it's got a little sun.
Yeah, it's got like a sunny flower on the front.
My sun.
Very similar.
Mm. Delicious. Oh my God.
I love it.
Bloody Mary. Bloody Mary. It could be spicier. Should I get
it could
sauce?
Be a lot spicier for me.
It could
we
be
get it, Rahel. You like spicy.
Oh my God.
I'm putting a ton of cold sauce on mine because it's one of my favourite hot sauces.
Shout out cold sauce.
So cold sauce is made in London. It's like a fermented Scotch bonnet sauce. You have to keep it in the fridge, hence cold.
It's so good.
That's cold with a K if you're looking for it online. So delicious. It's like really fruity.
It's so good.
It's got a nice heat.
Yeah, I really like how fruity this one is.
And everyone else.
Mm. The cold sauce actually is bringing out the tomatoiness a lot more, but it's still like a nice, gentle burn.
Mmm.
Slay.
How's it with the wine?
I know, it works so well.
I think it works. Mm.
Beautiful.
Yeah, because it's not too high in alcohol. Okay, I'm happy with that.
Me too.
Yeah.
We've done it again.
We did
happy.
It again. Mm. That was so great. All right, well, what are we going to talk about now?
Wow.
Now what do we say?
Put my toast down. Hannah, best things you ate this week.
So, I follow a lady called M the Nutritionist.
Oh, she's so great.
She seems like, I saw that she follows you. She seems such a cutie.
I think her content's beautiful. Her food's really beautiful. Tick.
Yeah, she's amazing. But she posted something about prawn burgers.
Mm.
Prawn wasabi burgers with like a red cabbage slaw and avocado. And I made them once, me and my partner. And I've been craving them ever since. They were so fucking good.
Mm.
So yeah, like you chop up some prawns. And then you whiz up another, like, the same amount of prawns in a blender with, like, spring onions and coriander and wasabi and chili sauce. It's so good. You make them together into little patties.
Platties.
You make them together into little patties, fry, and then you just kind of, like, make, like, a slaw. So good. It was so amazing.
Oh, that sounds really nice.
Really
I want
nice.
A brawny burger.
Yeah, shout out Em, the nutritionist. I don't know if you're listening at all. She might be a bit too cool.
I feel like she might. I feel like she might.
Riff them.
Yeah, maybe.
Who might riff them?
I'm too busy with my toes. Leave me alone. Bloody mare bits got
what
me.
What about you? What about you?
I feel like I've had a fucking great food week, so I'm going to try and dig into the archives and see what I've got. I went to Blackout Smangal for the first time with our friend What Willie Cook, and had a really, really excellent meal. We ate everything, literally everything, everything and some. It was a beautiful meal. I got so pissed.
Did you see my bestie Angus?
I did see your bestie Angus. Met him for the first time. He's a lovely man.
He's so lovely, isn't he?
So nice. Yeah, it was really nice to meet him. But the best thing I cooked was probably, I was testing like a harissa pepper soup. So it had a red lentil base, loads of chard, peppers, a recipe paste, cumin, cinnamon, and then whiz that up and put halloumi croutons in it.
Mm.
So what happens, you know when you cook halloumi and you put it in a salad and then it becomes like a tough little bullet,
mm-hmm.
and it's shit as soon as it's cold. If you put it in a soup, it just stays hot for ages. It's a revelation,
ooh,
honestly.
Wow. Good tip.
Halloumi's in the soup.
A hard cheese crouton.
A hard cheese crouton, because then it will just like, it will stay really soft in the soup.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a nice kind of herby oil on top as well.
What about you, Rahel? What was the best thing you munched on this week?
I would say it was my lunch today at the Hackney Chinese Community Services Centre.
Mm.
They do tri-weekly lunches open to members and non-members alike. It's £6 for non-members, and they serve the most heartwarming, comforting, generous meal. Today it was a two-course lunch, first course being this beautiful, warm, egg brothy, leafy soup situation.
Mm.
And then for the main dish, it was a rice platter with several side dishes. But the standout thing for me from this rice platter was this fried fish with a black bean sauce.
Mm.
And oh my God, incredible value for £6. And just getting to share it with a bunch of my friends who is just, you know, who either work in the area or like a bunch of us regularly go to the community center quite regularly. And then being surrounded by like all these lovely elderlies who are regulars at the service center, at the community center. It was, yeah, always a good lunch. I highly recommend.
There's always playing mahjong there and stuff as well, isn't
there? Yeah. So the thing is, it's a very punctual lunch where you arrive at 12:30 and you wrap up at 1 p.m. sharp, because they basically start non-consensually packing up for you.
Do not come between an elderly Chinese woman and mahjong. Like,
oh
just
my
don't
God, no, because they were, you know, they need to pack up and get ready for mahjong, and you got to respect that.
It sounds delicious.
Do you join in the mahjong ever?
Ooh. I actually barely know how to play mahjong. I had like a very short kind of Kickstarter lesson from a friend, my friend Rena. And it's so complicated. And the thing is, like, I heard from my friends, even from my friends who are good at mahjong, they would come in to the weekly mahjong sessions that are open to whoever. And the expert elderlies would be in one corner and everyone else would be on the other, but solely because everyone else is just too slow for these experts. They'd be like, you are an inconvenience to me. You're not allowed to play with me. You are not worthy of competing against me.
One day you will graduate.
You earn the right.
Yes. Completely. Yeah. One day you graduate the pro
one
table.
One day in 30 years.
Wait, when you're 70. Maybe.
Maybe if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
I don't think I'd ever be allowed on there.
Oh, mom.
I don't think I've got it in me.
Well, that sounds absolutely delicious. Is it kind of like a if you know, you know spot, or is it open to anyone that wants to come and check it out?
I think it's open to anyone, I'm pretty sure, because it's basically £6 lunches for non-members. Or if you want to be a member, which I'm pretty sure is open to anyone as well. It's just like a £10 fee for an annual membership that opens you up to, you know, an array of events and, you know, things like that. And discounted lunches at only £4.
Oh, that sounds so amazing. Good. Yeah, like, I saw that today and I was like, fuck. If you guys
stunning.
Want to have food envy all the time, follow Rahel's personal Instagram account. It's insane.
But
it's so
I also came across this thing earlier today where I was talking to my friends, and we did come in a pretty big group. And a friend of mine was asking, is this all you? And I was like, yeah, these are a couple of my friends. And that kind of made me a bit self-existential to be like, am I gentrifying the Hackney Chinese community?
No!
Sometimes?
Dun, dun, dun.
So like a part of me also kind of wants to like gatekeep it.
Oh yeah, disclaimer, don't join it.
Yeah.
Please don't
go
join.
Go come and contribute to the cause, because they do a lot of important work for the community, but also be respectful of the environment and understand that it's a safe space for a lot of the regulars who go there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't book your work social if you work at a... I don't know.
A bank.
Exactly. If you work at a bank, don't book your work social for it. But come with a mate and contribute.
Yeah, yeah.
Pay more than £6, you know? Probably.
Don't try and project your
pounds.
Social virtue by bringing your next meeting partner into the Hackney Chinese Community Centre. You know, that's just not cool.
I'm sure
not
people would. I'm sure like, if you hadn't said that, someone would have. That's amazing. I know, that sounds delicious. Oh, I'm hungry again. Oh,
never ends. It never bloody ends.
I'm always hungry.
So we had a week off podcasting last week because Hannah, you were on a trip.
A middle class. Where were you? A middle class. Now.
You've graduated, baby. Graduated.
It's called class mobility. Look it up. I got invited very kindly by 67 Pall Mall, they're a fine wine members club in London on Pall Mall. Very fancy. Never actually set foot in Pall Mall before, but they are kind of like trying to do like a similar thing to Soho House where they like open up around the world different things. So ooh, they've got lovely. Like. A club in Singapore, but they always kind of like have it in buildings that are kind of like suited to the area. So they've got like a gorgeous tall glass building in Singapore. They've got a lovely kind of chateau in Beaune in Burgundy. And then they've opened like a little lovely chalet in Verbier, which is where I went. Honestly, beautiful. I understand why Tyler, the creator, goes and writes his albums there. It's so does fucking he? Inspiring, beautiful. Yeah. He just, it, like, literally spent, like, a third of his last album talking about how great Geneva is.
Oh, shit. I did not clock that.
You call me you get lost. Yeah, he spent ages talking about Geneva. And I can understand because, like, honestly, you know the bit in... This is the second time I've referenced The Simpsons in the last hour. You know the bit in The Simpsons movie where Homer puts the poster of Alaska and then they nearly crash the car. And he's like, oh, at least my poster didn't tear. And he grabs the screen and that's what it actually looks like. Honestly, all the photos that I could have taken couldn't do justice because the depth and the sheer scale of these mountains. Or that's what I felt when I saw everything. I can't ski.
That's so, okay. Skiing's overrated.
But it was a wine trip. So I went and I tasted all the wine and I enjoyed the après, which for me was technically avant. And what's during in French?
Oh, you're asking the wrong person. No comment.
Pass.
During in French. Pendant. Pendant?
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 Pendant? Pendant? Yeah, that was $10 better. Yeah, pendant, avant, pendant, et après. I was just drinking the entire time.
Delicious.
It was
delicious
amazing.
Treat.
It was like really, so I learned a really interesting fact. So Swiss wines are fucking delicious, but 98% of them are drunk within the Swiss border. 2% of them leave.
They just don't export.
They just don't export because they all get fucking drunk.
What are they like?
Oh, so good. So because like it's such high altitude, obviously, and it's such a cool climate, all the wines tend to be a lot fresher than you would expect. So we were doing like a blind pretty much every night and kind of like, oh, can you guess the variety and where it was made? But like so often I'll be like, oh yeah, Cab Franc from the Loire. And they're like, this is a Syrah from Switzerland.
So they're super individual.
Super fresh, super terroir focused. I mean, every fucking region is terroir focused. But you know what I mean. I worked in wine marketing for so long, the amount of times that a producer gets in touch and I was like, so what's unique about you? And they're like, we're so focused on terroir. And I'm like, yeah, what else? What else? You all are. But it was super awesome. They were super accommodating. Even though I didn't ski. The one time where I kind of wished that I did is when I had to do a 20-minute walk up a piste to get to lunch. And my legs were aching so much. I think the only reason that I stayed like fit and healthy and kind of was able to keep my head above water in that way is because I walked for 20 minutes up a ski slope. And oh my God, I earned that glass of...
Those glutes, man.
I earned that glass of Laurent Perrier. I was just like... Oh. I was so sad to leave, but I was also very dizzy for the entire time. I'd never been...
Altitude
sickness. True. We were about 10,000 feet above jeez. Sea level.
I'm not a skier, I have to say.
No.
I like the sound of the vibe of being in a ski resort.
It's beautiful.
Hanging out in kind of the bright sunshine and the snow and the scenery and drinking nice wine and eating nice food and going to the spa, hot chocolates.
Absolutely.
Delish.
I would just go for the vibes in the hot tub.
Have you skied?
I've never skied in my life.
Do you ski?
All I know about it is vibes.
This is a safe space for not skiing.
It's true. I love that tweet where it's like rich people will look you in the eye and ask you something insane like, do you ski? But yeah, it was amazing. Like, but the food was so fucking decadent. I think that because you burn, I think, 2,000 calories like every half hour or something insane like that.
Do you?
Skiing is like insane because you're using your legs. You're basically squatting. Yeah. I would go back just for a holiday and to not ski. Mm. I would do like one skiing lesson every 2 days and I would go for 4 days and then I'd spend the rest of the time vibing because it is amazing because everyone's drunk. And everyone's eating cheese.
Maybe I would like it.
Should we go? Should we go back?
I think we should. I'm absolutely not skiing. Probably not even ski school.
Yeah.
I went skiing. I've been skiing twice in my life. And I both times was a child. And neither
not
time.
Like it.
No. My mum is not a skier and would be reading her book in the cafe. And I'd be like, I just want to be with her.
I think
I just want to sit with my mum with my book, hot chocolate, looking at the vibes, and that's still where I am.
And the hot chocolates is kind of like the piling the cream into the melted chocolate kind of vibe. The food was so sensational. It was amazing. But I think, I think the time to learn probably is when you're a little tiny top, because you saw these little, they were like about 2 feet high and they're waddling and they're like little puffy ski suits and their helmets, and they would fall down, like they would face plant. It was so cute. But like,
I feel like you're fearless at that age though.
You're fearless. Like they were just kind of like going down on their skis, going, crying for a bit and then being like, yeah, whatever. But the après was amazing. I would go back just to holiday if it wasn't. So because it was a press trip, I very luckily didn't have to pay for much. But the time that I did, the one thing that I did buy, I was like, I forgot toothpaste. So I went to the local pharmacy to buy toothpaste. £12.
Oh!
No!
£12 for Colgate.
No.
I feel like the cost of living in Switzerland is just a different level of mad, isn't it?
So funny you should say that. My favourite fact, besides the 98% of Swiss wine is an exported thing, is that there's a housing crisis in places like Verbier, because the millionaires are being priced out by the billionaires.
Oh, well.
Poor, the cost of living crisis is affecting us all. But it was
great. A river.
Yeah, but like, because like you burn so many calories skiing, like all the food is super carby, to like get you back up to kind of like a normal
kind of
calorie count for a day.
Give you the energy to keep plowing through that snow.
So it's like cheese and... At one point, I was like, I literally feel like Henry VIII. I need a fucking salad. I asked for a salad and it came with like about like 50 grams of shaved truffle. And I was like, fuck me. I cannot do this. I need to come home. But it was absolutely incredible and I would recommend it. Weirdest thing that happened though, and then I'll stop talking about the trip. Got hit on by a guy that thought I was a MILF.
You're in your mid-20s.
He was 22.
3 years does not a MILF make. Please.
Like, y'all know I love MILFs. I was like, okay, cool.
Okay, I'm actually not very much older.
Oh my God.
Like
so it was like, we kind of sat down and he like lives in Verbier. He is like helping, teaching skiing in Verbier. And sat down and like, I caught a vibe like 5 minutes in. And I was just like, it was very sweet actually, because all the people also caught the vibe and they were like, so what does your boyfriend do? Oh. He does not give a solitary shit. But I had a boyfriend.
Boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
22-year-olds are like that.
22-year-olds are like, yeah. But like it kind of came to a climax where, you're going to laugh at this. We were talking about après like DJs. And I was like, Peggy Goo would be so sick. Like, I don't know why she doesn't do more like ski resort après stuff. He's like, yeah, you look a bit like Peggy Goo.
What?
I was like, are you high? Yeah. You are so thirsty.
Wait, okay, like, countless times have I and a lot of other East and Southeast Asian friends who happen to DJ get compared to Peggy Goo. And not that that's acceptable. That is also extremely problematic. You're literally white.
It's like, you're so thirsty. You want to tell me that I'm a different race.
I'm not sure which is more problematic, to be honest.
I don't know.
Oh, you don't see it? Okay, fine, whatever. It's fine. I was actually bringing up so you guys would say, yeah, actually, Hannah. But no, I was literally like, it was like literally got to the end of like, this is like the whole conversation we were all having. Got to the end, he said that and everyone was like being like really fun, like calm, like what the fuck. But as soon as he said that, everyone burst out laughing like at him. And I was like, yeah, you fucking suck. He's like, what? She's sexy as fuck. And I was like,
oh my God.
But yeah, guys will literally, it really reminded me of guys at the university that I went to, kind of like, posh guys that don't think they're posh but are, and like will literally say anything to get you to sleep with them. Anything, include saying that you're a different race to what you are.
Fucking weird. What the hell? Is skiing for wealthy people in Indonesia a culture that exists?
Probably for the very wealthy. They would have enough kind of disposable income to frequently travel out to Europe loads and thus ski.
Will they go to like Japan or something? Or is that even, I mean, Japan is probably even more expensive.
Where's the closest? I would say I don't have enough of a cultural pulse point with that side of the wealth.
Totally
of
fair.
Indonesia.
Totally fair.
To know whether people regularly ski.
Honey,
I know I don't, and my family doesn't, but.
Yeah.
To be fair, the only thing that the only reason that I'm aware of and can meme the massive cultures because of the insufferable people that I went to university with. They're like, yeah. Did you ski? I'm like, oh my God.
They're bloody everywhere in the UK.
Speaking of massive failures, Madonna, Beyonce, how did that go this week, Sophie?
Absolutely livid. I just don't understand how we've got to a place, right? So Madonna and Beyonce both announced these enormous tours that they were doing, you know, world tours. And you can't even get on a pre-sale list. I don't understand how regular people are ever supposed to attend gigs of mega stars ever again. I don't get it. They all sold out within seconds. My computer crashed. Nothing.
But also the tickets that are available are like £2,000 for not even that good a seat.
Insane. Genuinely, I got into the Beyonce one eventually, but all the ones that were reasonably priced were gone. And it was ones that were, £2,000 left. And I was like, what the fuck?
Woman does not need more money.
No.
She's doing God amazingly. Like, I'm glad that she's super rich because she deserves to be, but like, what's another million? I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive.
But I don't understand. I don't feel like there's any accountability for Beyonce.
That sounds like a ludicrous thing to say.
But I feel like Taylor Swift has a bit more of a dialogue where she will like, I feel like she apologized for it.
Did she?
I think she did.
Oh, because I had like a similar thing with Taylor Swift. Where it was like, how like, the average fans, like the teenage girls that you're writing music for and like have built you the success.
Yeah. How are they going to?
Yeah. Did you try and get any ticks?
No, I just don't have the ability to move that quick. Like, honestly.
honestly, if it's before 1 p.m.
Honestly, like, I don't even know how people get tickets to my Supper Club promo.
As we say, you
I'm gonna be able to.
You're just like, in fact, you relate to Beyonce in many ways.
Stop it. It's me, the Beyonce of Indonesian food.
Yeah, you know, Rahel, you look a bit like Beyonce.
Throwback to the previous joke.
Basically the Indonesian Beyonce.
It's a privilege not even to have the cash, but to have the time of day.
Absolutely.
To sit at your computer, like in the middle of a work day.
If you're working like 0 hours contracts,
yeah.
Like you have to, like you're teaching the next generation or you're cleaning or you're doing job.
You've got a bloody meeting. Can't do it. Exactly. It's like it's saying that you've got time to sit on your computer for an hour, let it crash, and then maybe nothing even comes of it. And then you have to work late.
Exactly.
It's bollocks. It's fucking bollocks. I don't know when it became so hard to go to see a gig.
Yeah, I feel like this is like a anti-Beyonce stan podcast. It's because last two episodes ago we complained about her performing in Dubai.
I mean, that's it. That's the thing. I mean, she's got the negative press of that, the negative press of this. And I don't feel like there's going to be any kind of like, sorry, guys. She's just like, Beyonce and gets to exist on a higher plane. Mm.
She never, but
and
that's
doesn't
her
have
thing.
To, what's that royal family phrase that they say? Don't complain, don't explain.
Don't complain, don't explain. Yeah, that sounds fair. But
sounds
like, she's never reacted to anything.
No.
Like, I remember, like, everyone just wanted to know who Becky with the good hair was.
Rita Ora,
which we now know to be Rita Ora.
Do you know what? I saw her Architectural Digest, and it's the first bit of media I've seen of her. Are you familiar with the AD YouTube channel?
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Architectural Digest are a big magazine. They've got a YouTube channel where they post, like, celebrities' house tours. It's basically, like, Cribs in the modern age.
Yeah, I like it, but it's like, ooh, rich person has big hoose.
They mostly have big hoose with shit interiors. But Rita Ora's one was actually all right, and she seemed more likable than in other bits of media I've consumed of her.
Who was the one with the really bad house? Like, the particularly bad one? Was that Cara Delevingne?
She had a weird house.
I think it was...
She had a weird house.
I think it had, like, a giant pencil or something.
Ooh. They buy weird shit art celebrities, is what you learn from Architectural Digest. No. There's a lot of, like, kind of not very nice light installations.
Mm. You know when you walk through Kensington and you walk past a gallery and you're like, who the fuck would buy that? And then you see it all. It's always like a spray painted portrait of the Queen.
Yeah,
bizarre. or a Lego sculpture, but it's got a cock or something like really lame like that. You know what I mean?
You've just tacky. Moved house, Rahel. Are you going to be buying some kind of...
I'll be buying my giant pencil.
You got the space all mapped out. It's ready for the pencil.
Is it just
the kitchen
pencil?
Island? No, giant pencil.
We're actually already neighbour adjacent, but we're about to be neighbours even more so because I've finally, after weeks of bitching about it, found a flat to live in.
Woo! Made it.
I mean, the cost of living / rental crisis in London rolls on, but I will have a roof over my head.
Are you paying
for
more
extortionate
for this
rents,
one?
But yes.
Oh, you poor thing. It's, you're already paying a lot. That's
it just the
me
rent
off,
just goes up and up and up and up. It's basically impossible to get anything for an affordable price anymore.
Yeah, it's so rough out there. Like, I'm seeing friends like trying to sublet a place and having like people bid for a rental.
Yeah,
like auctioning.
Oh
like
my God.
I offer this rent. No, I'll double that or something. I don't know how
it's post-capitalism.
It's happening with
disgusting.
Every property I've put an offer in on in this rental hunt, it's been, is this your best offer?
Whoa.
Do you have another offer you'd be willing to go to? And we keep just saying, no.
That's literally
plenty.
A rental.
Thank you.
Can you give us any more money?
Like, no.
God. Absolutely.
You have
not.
More money than what this flat or house is worth.
Do you know the other thing that I've been thinking about cost-wise is, so I've got these sofas that I bought secondhand years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I want to get them reupholstered.
Mm.
That's pricey. And yeah. I feel like it's a thing that, it's obviously a really highly skilled trade, but it's also, from a sustainability standpoint, we should be encouraging people not to buy new things all the time, yeah. but to kind of refurbish things that they already own. And in so many...
Or sell them on to someone else.
Or sell them on to someone else, exactly. But I think in so many areas, we've got really good at it, you know, with like websites like Depop and, you know, eBay selling furniture and stuff. But in terms of reupholstery, it still seems to be a really expensive industry.
Mm.
Do
really
either of you guys
is,
know
yeah,
anything
yeah.
about it and anywhere I can go, or any listeners, if you do, tell me. I feel like it's probably traditionally not a posh person trade.
Yeah, you're right.
And there's a ton of people who would do it really well. But I feel like all the popular ones that I see out there are ludicrously expensive.
Yeah.
And would it not be better from a sustainability standpoint? It feels quite capitalist that a business that is inherently about sustainability charges so much money.
More than actually getting a sofa.
Exactly. It would be cheaper for me to get a sofa made bespoke than it would to get my sofa reupholstered a lot of the time.
Doesn't make sense.
Which is crazy. Yeah. It's just a bit of fabric.
Yeah.
I say that I've literally no idea what it entails to reupholster a sofa, but.
Honestly, yeah, it's true. Like I think that's the reason that I'm not very quick to condemn people that buy fast fashion. Because the mum who is like a single mum and she hasn't got a lot of money and consumes lots of social media and thinks she can't wear the same outfit twice, like honestly, the amount of kind of like tillies that are like, oh, just buy a £300 sweater and then you'll wear it for the rest of your life. But it's like,
no, I'm so no. with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have no shame to the working class person that buys fast fashion because literally, like,
the sustainable affordable option isn't there.
The sustainable affordable option isn't there, and there's so much weight put on like professionalism and like being presentable, like having like a new outfit and something that doesn't have holes and something that isn't obviously repaired.
And the social pressure of having new shit all the time.
Especially Absolutely. For women.
Yeah.
Especially for women.
There's so much ignorance and just classism towards like certain practices and just like, you know, social enterprise, such as, you know, upholstery or everything down to, you know, buying organic foods or even veganism. And I know that I run like a plant-based Indonesian supper club, but the attitude towards plant-based foods here in the West tends to be so elitist in that, you know,
sure.
it's, you know, all about vegan meat substitutes and, you know, all these kind of like organic plant-based foods and stores. Yet, you know, in my culture, plant-based foods have existed for centuries and generations.
Out of necessity.
Out of necessity more than out of choice. And I think a lot of people forget that. And I think this can draw into loads of things like what you just said about, you know, sustainability versus aesthetics when it comes to like reupholstering things.
For sure.
And
for sure.
I think a lot of people just need to keep that in check when, you know, practicing sustainability.
Yeah, for sure.
Back to your supper club, actually. So you're not plant-based, but your supper club is. How come you landed on the supper clubs being plant-based?
So to start with, I think big motivation to why I started
my plant-based supper clubs. Why I started the supper clubs, period, was because, you know, I wanted to, as you mentioned, Hannah, earlier, to raise awareness about my cuisine. And part of that was to do with specifically tempeh, which is, you know, fermented soybeans. And what appalled me when I moved to London was just its existence and, you know, its representation as this glamorized, you know, superfood or, you know, this vegan meat substitute. And a lot of people don't realize its ancient Javanese beginnings where, you know, as we were saying earlier, was created more out of necessity than out of choice because people weren't able to afford those meats. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very passionate about things like that. And then the more I cooked Indonesian food, the more I realized so many of our other food items have been appropriated in similar ways, such as banana blossoms, jackfruits, da da da. We've had this in our cuisine for centuries, literally. Mm-hmm. So there's
satay
definitely
as well. Sorry.
Oh my god, absolutely.
People just
putting
the word satay in front of anything.
Get me started on satay. Oh my god. this was so baffling. With satay, basically in Indonesian, it refers to over 200 of our skewered dishes.
Yeah.
Many of which have nothing to do with peanuts whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And yet I moved to the UK and I find on the high street it being incarnated as, I don't know,
satay sauce.
A satay rice a satay marinade and stuff like that.
And there's no skewer in sight.
No skewer in sight. And just because it was, you know, a peanut butter based sauce kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, things like that that motivated me to do my supper clubs. But what were we talking about? Oh, back to veganism. why I continued doing it after first it being an educational standpoint was I realized it just makes it so much more accessible to all my guests. And, you know, I always say that I run my supper clubs as an Indonesian dinner party before it's a plant-based one. And this is evident when, you know, I come and I dine with my guests and loads of them don't happen to be vegans and they only realize everything they've eaten was plant-based after I informed them much later in the evening.
Genuinely, and when I came to your supper club, I would not have known it was all plant-based.
Exactly, and I don't advertise that explicitly.
Yeah.
And that kind of just proves so much more how the complexity and the depths and flavor in Indonesian cuisine more than makes up for the lack of meat and dairy. And I think that's one of the many, many reasons why I love my cuisine so much.
Oh, I love that.
So well said. Oh.
It's a really
coming for our jobs. Honey.
But it's such a smart way of getting people to kind of open their eyes to Indonesian cuisine and to plant-based foods being not lesser than other foods.
No, absolutely not. And I think there's something so patronizing as well about, you know, encapsulating plant-based foods as, you know, just vegan meat substitutes and, you know, vegan like meatballs and vegan bacon and stuff like that. Not all people who want to eat plant-based need it to replicate something that you've cut out of your life. It can just be something very genuine and very delicious still.
Love that. I personally, when I'm cooking plant-based food, I much more take your kind of approach, which is not so much with meat substitutes, apart from the occasional corn chicken nugget.
There's nothing wrong with
which
them.
Are delicious.
I don't mind it. It's delicious. Yeah.
But lots
but there's
of like
just a whole world
pulses,
out there as
tofu,
well.
Tempeh, vegetables
absolutely
used in exciting ways is definitely.
And tempeh does not need to be bacon.
No, it's a different thing.
It's a
delicious thing,
of its own.
In its own right.
Exactly.
Mm. There you go.
And you did such an amazing job of like telling the world that on Sunday brunch in your first time. Like I can't remember. It was satay you talked about first. Yeah, first of all. Yeah, I just think it's so fascinating. And I agree, like, just because you're eating plant-based, like everything that you need from a meal is in the plant-based world. Like, got texture, flavor.
Absolutely.
You can put salt on everything. Like literally, like meat only tastes amazing when you put
because
salt on
salt.
It.
Yeah, no, you're too fucking right.
I remember when I did food anthropology. We talk about food deserts, specifically in the US, about how like people would love to get fresh fruit and veg, but there's some places, like some communities in the US, like for like working class communities, well, US equivalent of working class, that there's not like a greengrocer or like anywhere you can buy fresh fruit and veg for like miles around.
Yeah. And so you live off frozen stuff, tinned stuff.
Yeah.
If
processed
that.
Stuff. Yeah. Wow. It's so it is so interesting because like, I don't even know if there was like a big farming culture in the US before that, but yeah, fuck. Hannah Crosby talking about something being a classed thing. Shock. But like, it's become a very classed thing. Kind of like, oh, it's so easy to eat healthy. It's like,
just go to Planet Organic and spend £12 on this block of tofu.
Yeah. Or like, or like £12 on like a cucumber and a few salad leaves. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
it's I think a insane. Hot tip that I would love to give the listeners is instead of going to your Planet Organics and your Whole Foods or whatever, I hope this isn't classist defamation.
Planet Organic hasn't offered to work with us yet. So it's
not fun. As of yet. I imagine they might not, and that's okay.
I would just go to your local East and Southeast Asian shops for, you know, your dose of tempeh, tofu. It's cheaper there and you're getting it from the right source.
And you get such a range there as well. It's not just kind of a one size fits all.
A lot of the
product.
Things that you will find in these like organic stores or like green stores and all, you will find it in your local Asian store. So worth a visit.
Also worth a visit for just the plethora of frozen dumpling products.
Oh my God, frozen, like so many things. Absolutely.
The frozen section is unreal in my local.
It will change your condiment game.
Yeah.
This is true.
Condiments, I haven't even talked about the...
Condiments.
Condiments.
Yeah, confirmed.
You could make it a game that you play where once a month you go into your local Asian supermarket and you pick up a different condiment and you would have the time of your life.
Exactly. I could just browse around the store for like 5 hours by myself.
Me and my best friend often do. It's like a good having a chat and stomp around the shop.
It's a fun way to spend an afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, yeah, you kind of, like, go to, like, your local Tesco's and you know where everything is. Like, you know, expect what you're expected to find. But it's, like, nice to go around and refamiliarize yourself with, like, completely different sections.
It's the same
completely as... different way of browsing food.
You know, when you go on holiday, and the most exciting thing about going on holiday always is getting to the supermarket in the new place that you are and seeing what they sell. Is that just me? Am I being weird?
I like the beach. I like the beach.
The beach is nice. Beaches are cool, but have you been to a supermarket?
That being said, though, I do love just browsing aimlessly my local big Tesco or Sainsbury's or whatever that I'm completely familiar with and I know where everything is because I find something so therapeutic in that. It's my favorite kind of mindless.
It's home. It's home.
Exactly. It's basically home.
Me and my best mate once spent 2 hours in our big Sainsbury's. We were just
having a
chat. I do
that by myself.
I'm here for it. I'm going to do that tomorrow.
You should.
I'm ready.
I'm sad that we don't have an Aldi or a Lidl. Mm. Are you familiar with the lore of the middle aisle?
The middle aisle.
What?
Iconic.
The middle aisle of an Aldi. You've been to an Aldi or a Lidl before. You know there's that one aisle that you will get like the most insane random shit.
Baby bottles.
Oh, the middle aisle.
They sell ridiculous dupes of... like designer products. So like the Jo Malone candles I've been buying for years. They're amazing. Apparently Aldi have started doing Tom Ford perfume dupes.
Shut up.
They're like a fiver and they smell identical.
No.
I haven't gone to my local Aldi yet, but there's one at the end of my road. So I think I'm going to go tomorrow.
No way.
I love the shameless ripping off of brand names. They do the same brand colors, the same packaging. And then instead of Oreo, they'll call it Neo. Like, it's just so good.
They must have the best lawyers. The best lawyers.
It's true. But
like, if you need legal advice, call Aldi and be like, who's your lawyer?
The wine game at Lidl and Aldi is also pretty on point.
It is.
It's really good.
Big fan.
The organic Prosecco is amazing. They even do like, I think they have Wine Klang there.
Mm. They have what? What's that?
Wine Klang. It's kind of like it's a natural wine with a cow on it. It's pretty good. Mine clang.
Yeah, it sounds like a willy.
Mine
sounds like
a German. It just sounds like a German willy. Mine clang. The last thing that we have on the agenda for the evening is Chin Chin.
Do you want to explain what's happened to Chin Chin?
So, I mean, like, it's something that I always knew, right? And Keeling Andrew, honestly, they're great. They're amazing importers. Like, they've imported incredible wines besides Chin Chin. But a lot of people are shocked, dumbfounded, floored, gagged when I tell them that it is not a natural wine.
I feel like this has come into the common lexicon. And I say the common lexicon, I mean people in London who like natural wine.
It's common to me.
Yeah. Lexicon in the last couple of weeks. Everyone in the world's jaw dropped.
Yeah. You know. Shook.
Did you hear this recently, or did you always know, Rahel?
I knew this maybe much later into drinking the wine, but I do have noticed the array of memes that have gone around in respect to this.
No, the thing is, like, I was literally writing about this today, like, natural wine is not a legally defined term. It is very much thrown around. Like,
it is, yeah.
Like, we all know what it means, like, low intervention. I prefer to use the term low intervention because it's, like, a little bit more, like, explicit and, like, what you mean when you say low intervention wine. I mean, you've interviewed with the wine, like, the least, that's not a groundbreaking definition here.
I liked it, to the point.
When it's low intervention, it means it's been intervened with low. But Chin Chin and one thing that Keeling Andrew, so they're importers, but they also own the Noble Rock Group.
Yeah.
They have always been, like, really pissed off when it's been referred to as a natural wine. And I think it's really interesting, kind of, like, the state of, like, the modern wine industry, particularly around young people, where it's just assumed that it's a natural wine because it had a nice label.
Fun label.
Whereas on, like, the label, it says nothing about it being a natural wine.
No. But it was also stocked in lots of places that would generally sell your natural wine. So I think it's easy to assume it belongs under the same umbrella.
Exactly. But then there were also kind of, like, places that would, like, buy the wine from the importer. And they would say, like, oh, buy our natural wine box.
And it was in there.
Because, like, I think the natural wine movement has aged horribly. Because a lot of
just
producers,
the terminology that you use around it.
Yeah, because a lot of producers, like, who have, like, made wine for generations and generations, it's within their interest to keep things going for the next generation, because otherwise they're not going to have a business. They've been, like, so the example that I used, Domaine de la Romanée Conti, DRC, they're one of the most famous Burgundy domains of all time. They've been biodynamic for 20 years, 30 years, because it's within their interest. Mm-hmm. But will you see them calling themselves natural wines? No. Mm-hmm. So while I think that the natural wine move was so pivotal in getting a new generation of people into wine, and I think without that, then wine may have probably, like, died a death among, like, common kind of, like, parlance and around in, like, a general population. But I think that because we had, like, this space that older people didn't want to be a part of, and fair enough, to discuss wine and kind of, like, the natural wine community, it was also a little bit of blind leading the blind.
Yeah. Mm.
So you'd get people that would become, like, natural wine influencers. They're like, oh, it's so natty, so great.
Crunchy.
I would taste the wine. I was like, babe, it is mousy as fuck. This wine is faulty.
Like, this is off. This is a done bottle of wine.
Mm. So, like, yeah, I think it kind of created this, I talk about this weird dichotomy that's created between, like, this wine has a funky label, which means that it's natural and that it's good. This wine, its label is black and white, as a pitch of a chateau. That means it's bad and it's killing the planet. Well, actually, it's
a bit more nuanced than that.
As with everything in life, it's more of a gray area than, like, a black and white area.
For sure.
But I find that really interesting that a lot of people didn't know that Chin Chin was a natural wine.
I didn't know that it wasn't. To be fair, I'd never read the label properly. I drank it often because it is the more affordable option that was sold in a natural wine shop.
Yeah.
So it became kind of like a gateway cool wine to drink.
Gateway cool wine is a good way to put it. Yeah.
Hey, look, like, just because a wine isn't natural doesn't mean it's not cool.
No, exactly.
Agree. I also personally love Vino Verde, so.
You love a little spritzy.
I like a lightly effervescent white wine.
Chackley.
Oh, I love a Chackley. Oh, Chackley is probably preferable to Vino Verde in my mind. But
yeah, whenever I order a Chackley, I always go, Chacolina,
la Chacolina.
I used to dance that when I was doing Zumba in year 9. Don't ask me why I was
Zumba
doing
Zumba in year 9?
Yeah, overly sexual for no reason. The most sexual PE class I've ever done. Okay, well, oh no, wait. Genuinely last thing I want to talk about.
Go on, hit me.
I watched The Last of Us.
Oh, have you watched this?
I have not, no.
Nor have I. So Hannah's going to have to tell us what it's all about.
So it's really funny because we got a PlayStation 5 for Christmas. By we, I mean I, for him. And
I did not know that you were gamers.
I am. Yes. Wait, you have a what reference?
Simpsons reference. Remember when Homer gets Marge a bowling ball?
Yes.
That was your bowling ball.
That was my bowling ball. But like, it was kind of just really sad to see him playing an Xbox 360 as like a man in the year 2023.
You're like, we don't do that anymore, babe.
As a man, why are you playing an Xbox 360?
Real men play PS5.
Yeah, exactly. So we got a PS5 and I played The Last of Us when it first came out, which must have been fucking ages ago. But we downloaded it in January and I've not gotten very far in it because I've been busy and I'm not a 17-year-old anymore.
Girl boss.
Girl boss. Guys, like gatekeep girl boss. And it was really... And then I heard that they'd done like adaptation of this amazing game, which, not going to lie, as well as being like a really good game with like a really unique monster and like a unique gameplay, it also has one of the best opening scenes of a game of all time. And I was watching it like, it's probably going to be shit. You know, we've all seen Sonic the movie. We've all seen Detective Pikachu.
Have we?
We've seen Detective Pikachu. We know that it's probably going to be shit. Oh my God, it's amazing.
It's all the internet has been talking about this week. And now I feel like I really need to
replicate frame for frame. So in the first episode, replicated frame for frame. Oh my God, like the script is exactly the same. And I'm like, oh my God, like the video game needed nothing done to it. The script was perfect. Because like, not to give away too many spoilers, but you essentially see, you know, when you watch a zombie apocalypse movie and it's like the first 24 hours when the apocalypse is coming and you know it's coming, but the main character kind of sees all the clues and that's what gives you the chills. Yeah. They haven't like quite pieced it together yet. So you kind of have all of that. But then in kind of like the opening credits of Last of Us, you're sat in the back of the car and all you can control is which way you look. And you're like 12-year-old girl. All you can control is where you look. You're in the back of a car as your dad is like driving you frantically out of the city. And wherever you look, there's some fuckery going on.
That's
one scary. Of the best, I've literally got goosebumps, one of the best opening scenes of a video game of all time. And they replicate it pretty much like scene for scene, word for word in the opening scene. So they essentially lifted it, but I was like, they're surely not going to like do it word for word all the way through because like quite a lot of The Last of Us involves shooting zombies. Like, if it wouldn't be a video game if you spend like 2 minutes shooting zombies and the rest of it was dialogue. So it's like, how are they going to make this work? Episode 3 of The Last of Us, I have not cried so much in quite a long time.
My friend Ned told me that it's the best episode of TV he's ever seen.
Yeah, wow. I'm not surprised because it's kind of, I think that to bulk out the series a little bit, they are kind of getting stories that are happening in the apocalypse that kind of vaguely tie in. So like there's this story and then at the end of the story it ties into where you last left off with.
Okay.
So
I can't wait to dig in.
You okay with zombies?
I love a bit of horror.
Yeah, I love horror. Are you okay with horror, Rahel?
I'm fine, but I feel like as I age, I become more affected by it.
Really?
I don't know why. I used to love it as a kid, but then it disturbs me a lot more now that I age. I prefer like psychological thrillers and stuff, probably.
People say that, like, but they also say it with like thrillers after they become parents. It's suddenly not that funny anymore. And they're like, no.
What, with what?
when they become parents.
Like horror isn't funny.
Yeah, horror and thrillers.
And just too like, real, the threats to... A lot of horror is centered around children, I feel.
Mm.
It's quite a common lexicon in horror. Is
very true.
Kind of parent
little plinky plonky, like wind uppy boxy little girl singing a nursery rhyme for no reason.
So Han's been on The Last of Us. I've been on Bad Sisters. What have you been watching?
Actually not so big of a TV person.
She's so articulate.
Our brains have melted.
Our brains have rotted into a little mush.
Oh my
We're
God.
We're like, God, why is Rahel so great at speaking?
I literally every
because
second.
Because all me
working.
And Tom do is watch political documentaries and foreign movies.
Are you shitting me? Socks house meeting is rolling up their sleeves right now. You're the next victim.
I am the starter pack.
You're a classier woman than us, though. Much classier.
So much classier.
I watch mostly reality TV.
Oh, but no, I started watching White Lotus on the plane.
Ah.
back to London.
There we go.
That was fun. And it's I recently finished it. It's so good.
Did you finish season two?
I finished it all. Yeah.
Oh,
I binged it.
The rare occurrence of me binging.
It's so meaty.
It's so meaty. It's so fun to watch. I love it.
You've still not done it, have you?
Still not done it. I love Aubrey Plaza.
Once you're done with The Last of Us on Now TV, then watch it. This sounds like a Now TV advert. It's not, but I would recommend buying Now TV because it's probably the best subscription service out there.
Catfish UK. I got it for Catfish UK.
What?
There's a catfish. There's a Catfish UK.
I love Catfish.
So presenting it is Julie Adenuka?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Presenter and Ubar Butler.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
So they both present it. It's really good. It's got just as many twists and turns as you'd expect from US Catfish, except it's creepier because it's in the UK.
Because UK creeps who are arguably creepier.
No, but like you kind of get like they would go on Catfish and they would like drive like 100 miles into the desert. And you're like, of course a weirdo lives here. Like, But then you kind of like get someone random. You're like, you seem like a normal person. Like,
it's more insidious when it's here because it's just your next door neighbor.
We've got quite a lot of letters to get through, and I feel like we've spoken quite a lot. So this one is a bit of a long ear, but it's a goodie.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I don't know if this really counts as a question for the pod, but I'm interested to get some outside perspective from some incredible ladies.
Thank you.
Who me? I'm worried about leaving a legacy or an impact. I don't want children and I don't think I ever will. And I'm finding it hard to find my dream job and climb the career ladder in the food and drink industry. Am I just being ridiculous or should I be this freaked out about my future? Because I'll be 29 this year. Love listening each week. Feels like a girly catch up and a life lesson every week.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Legacy and impact. I think that it's like, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently about impact. And I think that this idea of legacy is like a really positive trigger warning mortality. I think it's a really good way to combat and kind of like, fight against like a fear of death that anyone might have. But I think that the idea of like legacy and impact is like a way that people find solace in like the limited time we have on this earth. And kind of if you make something meaningful that's going to live beyond you, whether it be a child, not in your case, listener, or kind of like a business or something important, that's like something that a lot of people find meaning in their lives. So that is very interesting. I don't think you should be freaked about your future because you're 29.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're all going to live until we're 120.
Fuck, we are. We're going to be working probably till we're 90.
We're going to be working till we're 90. The stories are going to extend, before this generation dies. So they're all 60 now. So that's going to be another 30 years before they die. So if we kind of like build a year on the age of retirement for every year that the Tories are still in power, that means that we will all... we're all going to retire when we're 110.
Rahel, what are your thoughts?
I think the idea of legacy is such a broad term that doesn't necessarily need to relate to how much you've affected, a mass volume of people. I feel like everyone can be a legacy to someone. I feel like everyone's special to someone. And I don't think you have to go out of your way to make, you know, this big impact that's like publicly facing to be a legacy.
Mm.
I don't think there should be the pressure in doing so. Like, as you are, I'm sure you're a very special person, and there's someone out there that when you pass away will remember you very dearly. And I think that applies to lots of people, because I feel like the idea of leaving this, you know, big shot like legacy boils down to a lot of like, you know, capitalism related goals as well, which I feel like isn't necessarily, you know, I don't think that's a special requirement in being, you know, leaving a special mark in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And also 29 is such a young age. There are so many memes out there going around about, you know, people who have made their marks in life at like 40 or something. Yeah. So there's no rush with, you know, all these things. And also there never should be a rush with achievements.
Yeah.
No, never.
I completely agree.
I say this as a 29-year-old woman who also has existential dread around this stuff some of the time. But I think that especially on what you're talking about not wanting children, to be honest, the reason that most people want children is a vanity thing. It's not even a legacy thing. I say that as a person who thinks that they want children in the future at this point. Mm. But the desire to have biological children is a vanity legacy. It's not a legacy of meaning in terms of the impact that you have on the world. Obviously, you shape the people that you raise,
mm-hmm.
but you can shape other people who you don't raise in loads of ways,
yeah.
like Rahel was saying, and you can have an impact on your community in ways that do not involve having children or your work or anything
Absolutely.
Like that.
There's so many people in this world who, you know, need your help and needs your hashtag wealth distribution.
Yeah.
And you can make a legacy and an impact in so many ways. And just, you know, yeah, exactly as you say, dive into that community and see where your work is needed.
Mm.
For sure.
I'm not very good with things like this, so I'm going to go on to the next question. We're going to end on a fun one. What's the difference between a tin and a can? Do you get a can of beans or a tin of beans? Worms and Coke come in cans, but for everything else, the line is blurred. Help, full stop.
Okay, so
for context,
I think that a can is a drink or a can of worms, and a tin is like a tin of beans or a tin of
I don't think
tomatoes.
I've ever used the word tin in my life.
Really? Is that a Britishism?
I have
a tin?
No idea. I genuinely have no idea.
Honey.
Would you say a can of tomatoes?
I would always say can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say can, yeah. But also like I am ESL, so I don't English as a second language, so I have no idea what's American and what's British.
I actually feel like Americans would say can for everything, wouldn't they?
Probably.
They don't say tin.
I don't think so. Yeah,
they would just say a can. Yeah. So this feels like quite a Brit specific existential
I'm
crisis.
EFL and I'm thicker than both of you, so just gonna like. So you know what? There's actually a definitive answer to this.
Go on, hit us.
It's got so many full stops, it kind of feels a bit passive aggressive.
They're angry that someone has asked this.
A can is cylindrical, stop. A tin is usually rectangular, lower than it is wide, and almost exclusively used for containing preserved fish, stop.
That's not true. We would say a tin of tomatoes.
Yeah, tinned tomatoes.
You say tin tomatoes?
Bastard.
Really?
Yeah, I would say, if wow. so I write recipes fairly often,
yeah.
I would always say a 400 gram tin of tomatoes.
Really?
400 gram tin of beans.
Oh.
I wouldn't say can in that environment, but I would say
Note
can of Coke.
Taken for future recipes. I've been throwing cans around all my life.
Do you know what? It's so subjective though.
It is, isn't it?
Who fucking knew? A jar is an entirely separate thing.
Whoa, no.
A jar is glass.
Definitely.
A jar is glass. If I'm saying a jar of beans, I mean the fancy kind in glass.
A jar of beans,
I mean Bold Bean Co. I'm meaning the Brindisa beans.
Exactly.
That's what I mean.
Oh, no. Cans or drinks, so like tin is a type of metal, but I think that it really... I'm not getting any answers.
Tin feels British to me. When I hear the word tin, I see like chimney sweeps doing a dance, you know?
Can is American while tin is British.
Hey,
I mean, that makes
sense. There you go.
Can.
A can of tomato. That was awful. I've never done a worse accent in my life.
Let's leave that hanging in the air like the bad fart it is. So sorry, Sonia.
Apologies to the American community.
The American community. The community of how many millions of people. I'm obsessed with the phrase American community.
That small little community of Americans out there.
Like the community.
That community.
I think
I am the only
got.
One in this room with an American accent. It's been a pleasure watching you both try and imitate the accent.
We fucked it. Rahel, is there anything that you would like to plug to our listeners?
Before we go.
Well, I mean, my next upper clip's still TBC, but if you look out on my Instagram as well, on my Instagram link in bio, you will find a newsletter sign up. There will be the next supper club planned for, I guess, mid-March. Would love to see you guys there. But yeah, I'll keep you posted.
How you will exciting. Have the time of your lives if you go, guys. Yeah. Please do.
We will probably be there.
Absolutely.
Obviously, probably, definitely.
If you've liked this episode, give us a rating, give us a review, give us a subscribe.
Give us a thumbs up.
Any validation we can receive, anything. We will accept with open arms.
Give us anything.
We'll see you next week for an extra special Valentine's episode.
That we have already recorded. So you're traveling forward in time and we'll be traveling back in time, but we will see you at that point in time.
You might even get it a little bit earlier. You normally get episodes. We're just really fucking with the system this week, guys. I'm really sorry, but we'll be back. Normal schedule the week after that. Love you. Bye.
I just have to say, though, this has been so much fun because... I quit my job recently and now I'm spending my Wednesday afternoons drinking wine and gossiping with girls. Best.
Yes!
This is how we all want to spend Wednesdays. Thank you so much, Rahel. You've been a great guest.
Thank you so much for coming. And if you want Rahel to come back, rate us 5 stars.
More validation for Rahel. For us, not for Rahel. For to bring us. Back Rahel.
Rahel clearly doesn't need anyone's validation, but we do. We desperately need it. Until next time, see you guys in the future.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.